Okay. So, for the purpose of the recording, can you please introduce yourself?
Okay. My name is Robert Logan, casually called Bob. I'm an ex-librarian from the University of Guelph. I'm 93 years of age, and we are presently in Norfolk Manor at 128 Norfolk Street, Guelph, Ontario.
Perfect. Okay, so I'm going to get into the questions here, and obviously you know what's going on here. I'm going to ask you a few questions. And
you go ahead.
All right, so the first question we got here is, I know you started, when we talked earlier, you started about, you wanted to become a librarian later, around 30 years of age, you said you started to become a librarian.
I'm sorry, try that again.
Well, you told me last time you became a librarian around the age of 30.
Actually, I became a librarian in 1968, which would have made me 43.
So just the question was, what drove you towards becoming it?
In 1968, I was living in Toronto. I was without a job, had been for a couple of years, and I was looking seriously at a job that was being offered at the University of Toronto, driving the university library van, service vehicle. The assistant chief librarian there was a man who died here in Guelph just a short while ago. His name was Brian Land, L-A-N-D. And while I was employed at the U of T, he asked me several times what I planned on doing when I finished my education, and I told him I was thinking of becoming a teacher. And he thought that my experience and my goals were better suited to being a librarian than to being a teacher. So I thought very seriously about his recommendations, and close to the end, I made up my mind that, well, yes, he was right. I would like to be a librarian. So I became one.
That's cool. And you talked about you had a few jobs before you became a librarian. You said you didn't like dealing with people's money and was it banking insurance?
Oh, yeah. I was in several jobs. I worked in banks as a clerk, and I worked in insurance companies, and I had a lot of minor, unimportant little jobs as well. But it was part of my growing up process.
You referred to the early years of working at the university as a golden era. You said it was a golden era. Why?
At this university, let me tell you, it was the golden era. Now, I've talked to you before about Bill Weingard, who died just a short while ago. He was the associate dean of graduate studies at the University of Toronto. And he was also a professor of metallurgy. And so I used to run into him occasionally on campus, in his office, in the buildings. And I was always impressed with the way he greeted me. I was a delivery person. But he always greeted me by name. And when I came to Guelph, he was president of the university. And I found the same trait in him. he would walk down what is now Weingart Walk, and he would greet staff, students, faculty, visitors, where he knew them, all very often by name. And again, that continued to impress me. So you can tell that when I came here, I was already impressed with the hierarchy and with its possibilities. I got to know the chief librarian, a man named Lockie McRae, and his associates, Florence Partridge and Margaret Beckman. Florence Partridge had graduated from Mack Institute back in 1926, and she had many librarian jobs before she became the chief librarian of OAC. And she held that post until 1960-something, 1985, somewhere in that region, when she became deputy chief librarian of Guelph.
Okay.
And then she took over the job of chief librarian when Lockie resigned to become associate chief librarian of federal government. But the most impressive member of that threesome was Margaret Beckman, who a year later, after Florence, became chief librarian. But she had been systems librarian here and had been responsible for the design and much of the structure of the library system in Guelph. So there were a lot of things to encourage me in being, what's the term I want, to put it mildly, excited about the possibilities. She eventually designed and helped with the construction of the Saudi Arabia University Library. She was responsible for the Hamilton Public Library system and for several other systems and buildings. So I was working with good and exciting people.
And I have something here. I don't know if it's an old newspaper article.
Oops, I didn't bring my glasses.
It's just, I'll just tell you. So this is, you can keep all these at the end, by the way. This is an old newspaper article.
Yeah.
And here's an article on Lockie. So the first column will attempt to summarize the developments in the library under the leadership of Lachlan McRae, who posts as chief librarian at the end of the month to become the associate chief librarian of the National Library of Ottawa. So this is when he was leaving. They did like a whole piece on him and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, you could keep all of these after this. You can
right.
Read them. These are all cool.
Yeah, I see that survivor.
Yeah. It's on the second page, the one on Lockie. Yeah, so I have a bunch of newspaper articles like this of stuff that mentioned your name and other people's names that you...
Right. Well, but it wasn't only the library and its systems and its personnel that impressed me. It was the excitement of developing a growing university. I think one of the things that surprised me was that normally heads of departments certainly require a doctorate. And yet, the heads of many of the departments here at that point might have had a master's. Certainly they had a bachelor's degree. And I thought, how can someone with just a bachelor's degree hold the head of a department ship? But they did. And it was for a good reason, because they were good researchers and good teachers and exciting personnel. So that's the environment I came into. And there were ideas being played. It wasn't just a research center, dull and blah. It was an exciting place where interesting possibilities were being discussed. New roads were being prepared. And the students were excited about being here. So, all in all, it was an exciting experience.
Okay. So, leaning off that, what was your favorite task when working during your tenure at working at the library? What was your favorite thing to do?
Well, I enjoyed every job I did here. Make no mistake about that. I was the head of the documentation center for a while, and I was the head of circulation and information. But I think the most exciting job I had was the one that I almost finished with, and that was teaching students, how do I put this again? I had classes for undergraduate and high school students to teach them research methods. It irritates me when people say methodology. It wasn't methodology. I wasn't studying the methods. I was teaching the methods. And those were good years because students were coming in and were inquisitive. They wanted to know. And my job was to show them how. And yeah, I think that was probably the most exciting part.
Okay. And how ahead of its time? You talked about how the University of Guelph was pretty ahead of its time technologically, which I have something to show you over there too. How ahead of its time was the University of Guelph under Margaret Beckman and Poppy and all the people you spoke of?
When I was at the University of Toronto, they had two of the brightest men in technology, in computerization, working there. And for all the years that they've been working at it, they seem to be getting nowhere. So when I came here and met Margaret and found out what she had been doing and found out what she had done for already for this university, I became excited about working for the university. She was looking to computerization as a present fact, not a future possibility. She was looking at future possibilities, but the fact now was the important thing. And she had her eyes open no matter where she went. She went to the University of Arizona. She's got a good plan of something new that was happening there. She was not afraid to steal it and bring it home. She admitted, I'm stealing an idea. It's a good idea. We're going to use it. That's the kind of forward thinking she had Of course, Lucky McRae had that same kind of thinking. So working together, they were building an excellent service. And the University of Guelph had an operating computer system while the University of Toronto was still twiddling its thumbs.
It has your name right there.
Yes.
Along with Larry Porter and Margaret Beckman.
Yes, that was part of the system, yes.
Yeah, this book, like, it explains a technical report describing design requirements and philosophy, file and record structure, system functions and features, hardware, software capabilities, and implementation procedures.
And you see, when the year on that?
Well, I think it was 1970.
Right.
Yeah. Because I got this from the library.
Yes.
They have this in the, yeah. It was 1970, I believe.
Yes, I thought it was
78.
Around 70, yes.
Yeah.
And so, again, that's the way Margaret got people involved. If she had a project, she spread the project around so that various people would get credit for adding to the university. And yeah, I'm rather proud of that.
This was something that it's like a book per se, but it's mostly like it's thick figures, coding. It like describes the functions and all that kind of stuff. It was cool. I found this. They take a look at this after too. And brings us into the next question.
Must admit that I was very pleased to be included in that team. And because I felt that my contribution was so minor, I was amazed to find my name amongst that group of three.
Well, because when I was looking up common names and people that you told me from our prior meeting, like you, I found a lot of newspaper articles. But when I looked up Margaret, it was tough to really pinpoint because there was University of Arizona, like you said, University of this. There's so many little things that. So that's why when I found that, I was really impressed. It was really cool to see that.
I just want to check in. You doing good?
Yeah.
Okay? I'm sorry.
I just wanted to make sure you're doing okay.
Oh, all is well. We're going
chatting away.
I'm doing most of the chatting. He's
that's exactly
protecting
how we should
his
be.
Ears.
I like it. You tell them stories, okay?
Yes, she has an impressive resume. So did a lot of the people that worked with her. She, make no mistakes about it, because of her push, her drive, she did make some errors. We're human beings. But she never let that stop her from pushing, and pushing us as well. She pushed her staff, and some of them hated her for it. Me, I simply enjoyed being in her company because she would listen to, despite the fact that I was a junior member of staff, she would listen carefully to what I had to say, tell me where I was wrong, support me where I was right. Hey, what more can you ask?
Yeah, that's true. But you said in the prior interview, the deans didn't really like Margaret.
The deans hated her. That may be unfair. There may have been one or two of the deans who appreciated her. I can think of a couple who might have. But by and large, as a council, they hated her. They were being conservative and looking at yesterday. She was finished with yesterday. She wanted to look at tomorrow and the day after. And that cost money.
Yeah.
And it was money that they would rather spend in their department than on a bunch of paper piled up in files.
And so, but during the time, right? So there was she was in charge in the 70s, right? She was the chief librarian in the 70s.
I'm sorry?
Was Margaret the chief librarian from like 68 to the early 70s?
Margaret, let's see. Margaret became a librarian in the 70s. Because I don't think she was chief librarian in my absolute early years. My memory is not that good. But certainly in the 70s. She had already built an impressive team that was appreciated by most of the faculty on campus. Because we were doing things for them that people at other universities were only dreaming about.
I was going to ask, do you think an individual like Margaret and like Florence, you mentioned as well, would have had a bigger impact in like today's society that's more accepting of like women and their personalities? And
no, one of the things I have to make clear, Margaret believed in personal strength, and she was not a feminist. Don't you dare call her a feminist. And she was Mrs. Margaret Beckman, not Ms. She was proud of that. And she worked on her strength, not on your weakness. And I appreciated that, and so did a whole lot of others. But that meant she would not bow down to the deans and the vice presidents. She was her own person.
And so you talked earlier about how you loved teaching. That was like your favorite task to do when you worked at the library. How much pleasure did you teach these kids like throughout the years? Like what, like was that, did that almost like rekindled your want of teaching when you were younger and you wanted to teach?
Jesus, man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a student at the University of Guelph. And I think I spoke of it last time. I had had a stroke, and they had wanted to reassess my abilities. And he sent me to this man. And so we went through a process. And at the end of the process, he said, "Mr. Logan, I remember you. You taught me research methods at the University of Guelph." It never dawned on me that my students grew up and took over impressive jobs.
For sure.
That is forever a joy, knowing that. Let me tell you, I have in my room there, I could have gotten it up, but I didn't, certificates that I got from the Wellington County, with the Grand River Board of Education. You have something on that?
No, no, not specifically, but I found something online, and it wasn't in the Guelph Library. It was in the University of Toronto Library for some reason. I couldn't get it here in time. It was a picture of in 1992 of you. It was after you retired, of you. Yes. with some of your former students and you getting honored, but I couldn't get the picture.
Yeah, I have that picture in my room. Those were teachers who brought their students to me on a regular basis. And they recognized me with a certificate for excellence in education.
This is just a picture of the...
Of,
yeah, under construction. That's, yes. I believe, in 67.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I wanted to ask you about is, so you obviously take a lot of pride in being a member of the University of Guelph community.
Yes.
And so I was also looking at past members of the executive committees, so the Retirees Foundation. I saw that you're actually president and like a member. So you could see 1991, you're there. 1992. You were vice president. In 1993, you were president. So I could see that you were always, even after you retired, you were still a part of everything.
Yes, I was part of the executive of the Retirees Association for 13 years after I retired. And I was proud of some of the work I did there, because I remember when I was... Let's see. I was a member of a working group, as well as president of... Oh, it's not important. I was involved in some rather difficult negotiations with the university, and there was a regulation by the income tax people that made it impossible for the university to increase my income, and I must admit I've forgotten the details now, but it was a regulation, and I spent several years on the telephone phoning Ottawa and fighting with them over this. I spoke... There are two departments. You might not know it in Ottawa. There's this department, which creates the regulation, and this department that applies the regulation. And they may not be thinking in the same way. So what is being applied is not necessarily what was intended. And so I had a vice president who was a pretty sharp individual. And he and I worked together on this regulation. And I eventually got tired of phoning the chap who was the head of the applying department. And I got in touch with the head of the department that wrote the regulation in the first place. And I asked him for his opinion, and he said, it's not important. I only write the regulations. I don't apply them. But he said, if you look at the regulation, there's a preamble that precedes the regulation. And if you read it correctly, the preamble makes it possible for them to do exactly what you want them to do. So I went back to this department, got nowhere, bugged this chap, who was a lawyer, bugged him and bugged him. Finally, he set up a workshop with this department, and it did absolutely no good whatsoever. This guy hadn't made up his mind. He was a bureaucrat. And that's the way it was going to be. Well, somehow or other, they got rid of him. And they brought in a new chap, and they went through the workshops again for the department. And in the final analysis, the regulation was changed. And I was informed. The university was a little bit upset because I was informed they weren't. I laughed at them. But I went to the board meeting and presented the regulation and its new interpretation. And the president said, this should be called the Logan something. Adjustment, no, that's not the word. It's unimportant. What he's saying is that I should be given credit for it. I didn't want credit for it. All I wanted was the money. And we finally got it. You see, what was happening was, if you were employed by the university, you could not only get the increase that the cost of living created, but you could also get a raise in salary. But according to the man in Ottawa, while we could get the 2% increase in cost of living, there was no way we could get an increase in the value of our salary. So we managed something out of it anyway. No, I had a lot of fun working for the university and working with the university, because I never thought of myself as working against the university. I was working with the university to improve its image and its working conditions.
Okay, so you were at the university from pretty much, like it inaugurated in 64 after all the colleges combined in 64. You were there in 68.
Yes.
How much did you see the university grow and flourish, just not necessarily just like people-wise, but even infrastructure, all that stuff? You were there from pretty much the beginning.
Forgive me if I think a bit about that.
Oh, no problem.
Growth is not always beautiful. A beautiful child can grow up to be an ugly individual, both temperamentally and physically. We had a beautiful child at the University of Guelph. It had space. You have no idea how beautiful it was to have that space. I'm surprised that the greens haven't gone.
Johnson Green?
I'm sorry?
They call it Johnston Green now. It's
the, yes.
Yeah, right across from Johnson Hall.
Yes, I'm surprised that Johnston Green hasn't disappeared by this time. The big buildings on the OVC side of Gordon are necessary. And I'm proud to see them there, and I'm proud of the service that they're teaching their students to give. That doesn't necessarily mean I have to like it. But there are a few buildings I resent. One of them is part of the physical sciences building next to the library, because that gobbled up a lot of property that was well used by students and faculty. So I resent the loss of that beauty and that familiarity. Mm-hmm. But as I say, in many instances, it was necessary. Maybe I'm a little jealous of what we had and what we may have lost. I guess we lost our innocence. And it's that that I miss.
You almost think you were becoming more like the University of Toronto, becoming more urban, and it almost seemed like...
That's right. You're absolutely right. I keep thinking of, for example, the Stone Road Mall. All of that is university property.
Mm-hmm.
They sold the property to the east, or at least a lot of it, where that strip mall is. And, of course, in those days, the university was money hungry. They still have lots of property in and around Guelph. From 401, south of 401, north almost to Elmira and Alora and Fergus.
Yeah, so, there's a good amount of stuff there.
And
they've spent a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and of course they've got a lot of property from farmers who have willed it to them. And I think, in my stupidity, I would have fought like hell to keep that property, the property of the University of Guelph. But somebody needed a building, so they sold some property. Anyway, do I seem terribly self-centered when I talk like that?
No. Well, you're not wrong in a sense that the University of Guelph had that like almost like nature aspect to it, and especially in the early 60s when it was...
Yes.
Especially someone from you that come from Toronto, you could see all the urbanization, all the buildings come up. Like you said, you're losing your innocence.
When I walked out of the new library building, pardon me, and walked into the arts building and out of the arts building into that parking lot, and then looked ahead and saw a barn, and a university. Why not? But at that time, it was a shock.
So I have another little newspaper article clip here. This one's from where is it? This doesn't say. This one just talks about you're getting the library presenting long service pins.
Yeah.
So this kind of segues 1981. There you go. So it kind of segues into the question I was going to ask you. What are your favorite memories from your 30-year career at the university? See, there's your name's highlighted all those times. You're not in that picture, but
Yes. I must admit I'd forgotten about that. I'm rather proud of the fact that I helped design that pin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says that in the quote. I could read it too if you don't see it. Long-term members of staff have a particular effect on the library, according to publication/liaison librarian Bob Logan, because they represent. Let me see where it says it. There it is. At the staff ceremony mid-November, these people were presented with certificates of librarian for their work. The label pins specifically designed by Mr. Logan.
Well, that gives me too much credit. It was Margaret and I who worked on that. But I must admit, it is one of the things that gives me some personal pride.
I have another one. I'm just trying to find... There's one picture of you. I'm trying to see if I can... There it is. This is a picture of you, Margaret, Bob Weingart's wife, Eileen, Rose McHugh, and Miss Pearson. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all just good... These are all times you've had throughout the university that I found, at least, in picture. It's a tough one at this thing.
I'm just wondering, is that Gene Hill?
That is John Moulton Howard and Miss Beckman.
Ah, John. Good old John. I won't talk about John.
Yeah, so what are...
He was a bright person, but he did a stupid thing.
Oh, did he?
And Margaret had to fire him. And that just about broke her heart, I think, because he was that good.
Yeah.
Well, we all do stupid things sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There.
So... Based off of that, like, what memories really stand out to you in your like, of just stuff you did?
Wow. I remember sitting in the faculty club, when the faculty club used to be in Johnson Hall. And there was a little corner where a lot of faculty a number of faculty and staff joined together for just chit-chat. And that sort of thing went on into the building where it is now. I bring that up because it was in that setting that I took my life in my hands and argued with Margaret. She had hired several librarians. I was one of them. This librarian whose name I shall not mention, was another bright person. But he had his own opinions and he expressed them freely. And his opinion of Margaret was not a great one. And he expressed it freely. And before she became chief librarian, Lockie McCrae was having difficulty with him. And he called me in and he said, "Bob, so-and-so is a problem. But I don't want to lose him. He's too good. Can you help us to calm him down a little bit? Can you make friends with him and keep him calm?" And I didn't really control them. So I tried, and I think I reasonably succeeded. He enjoyed my company, and we chatted quite freely together. But when Lockie left, and it was Margaret alone, she wanted nothing to do with him. I want to get rid of him as quickly as possible. I said, Margaret, be careful what you say and what you do. I said, he is a problem. He is expressing himself too freely about his feelings for you, which are not high. And I have to think about this very carefully so that I'm saying the right thing.
No worries.
No worries. I said to her, whenever you've heard of a major problem with the building or with the systems or with anything, you've always said, don't fight it, use it. I said, here you have a problem. Don't fight it, use it. And I didn't get fired for it. So she obviously took what I had said to her. But within a year or 2 years, he was gone. And I always thought that was a loss because he was the music librarian. Oops. But that's not... You wouldn't be able to find out from that anyway. He had good control of what he was doing. I hate to say this, but he was an American with an American attitude. And does that sound...
No, it's pretty... It's a pretty common... Obviously, it's generalization, but it's not...
Yes.
It's not...
Anyway, there you are. What were my proudest moments? That was one of them, the very fact that I could sit and discuss a problem like that with Margaret and succeed in what my aim was, which was to calm down the entire scenario. I was proud to receive the multi-year pin. I was proud to be involved in an awful lot of things. I was the official greeter, if you will. The ambassador to Japan, or the ambassador from Japan.
One of them's right here. That they have that too.
You got that as well?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
This is
they came to...
It's here, this the one right here on the right.
Ah, yes.
You could see it, your name is...
I mean, that kind of thing, whenever we had official visitors, I was the greeter. I was the one who showed them the system, showed them how we operated. And so Margaret must have had a fair amount of respect for my knowledge and my abilities in order to let me run away with that. Walking into a classroom full of students and being able to get their attention and put across the ideas that I wanted to give them so that they could succeed in their research, that was a moment of pride. Mind you, I had some dumb moments too.
background too?
I remember once when I was the head of circulation, the alarm went off and they challenged the student to return whatever it was he had on his person that belonged to the library, and he denied everything. So they brought him into my office, and I reluctantly called the police, and the police came. This is where I did the stupid thing. I got up out of my office, walked into the front information desk, greeted the policeman, and brought him back to my office. By that time, the student, who was not stupid, took whatever he had and stuffed it in my garbage basket. I now had it. I was the criminal. I mean, how dumb can you get? But I'm sorry, that's the way my mind worked. It assumed he was honest, despite the fact that he was proving he was a crook. Anyway, now there were lots of moments. When we were in the faculty club in the present building. Have you been in the faculty club?
I have not. What floor is it on?
Okay.
Hmm? What floor is it on? Four?
Tim is the graduate student club.
Sorry? What's that?
Graduate student club.
I think that's on four.
That's on the fourth floor. They're side by side.
Oh, okay.
When you walk in, turn right, you walk into the club, and the bar is on your left, and the couch area where we used to sit and chat at lunch hour is almost straight ahead of you. And in that group, we had the president and oftentimes the vice president, and several of the deans and professors, and about four librarians, Margaret Beckman, Jean Hill, Ellen Pearson, and Bob Lugan, were all seated there. The fact that I was accepted into that company, that's a highlight. I remember the editor of the paper that you've been using.
Mm-hmm. You're in it too at the back.
I don't know if it'll show his name there or not.
Well, let's put his name be.
His name was Don Jose.
Don Jose?
J-O-S-E. We were discussing some political matter from the city, and in this particular situation, I turned to the group and said, "Well, in my opinion, as now, what was the expression I used? I meant as a common street person, my opinion was, and I was, Don Joe stopped me and said, "Bob, you're not a common street person. The fact that you're a member of this group proves that you're part of the elite." I don't like being elite, but the fact that he was prepared to argue the point with me pleased me.
Oh, for sure.
Anyway, what else? Oh, there's so many things. I put together a catalog for a display that was going to be made at the Art Center. The University of Guelph has a pretty impressive collection of Second World War Russian posters, and they were going on display, and I made the catalog for it, and a man whose last name I'll never remember, his first name was John, and I'm embarrassed by that, wrote the foreword for it. The fact that he would condescend to do that for me impressed me. I'm a difficult person to impress.
Well, from all of the research I did, and all the articles I found, it's clear that you were an engaged member in the university, and also a well liked person in the university. There was they're not going to say bad things in the newspaper, but there was never any bad things. You were engaged in many things, and I believe that Margaret, like you said, sees the same thing that I see. You might be 93 years old, but you're still pretty charismatic. So for you to be the greeter of someone, you need that, right? For to be a good teacher, you need charisma. You definitely have that.
Well, I must admit, I enjoyed all of my 23 or 24 years at Guelph. And I enjoyed my retirement years working for Guelph from a different perspective. So yes, all of my years at Guelph have been, to me, useful, productive, enjoyable. Now, as for the town itself, I wasn't so very much involved as my wife was, because she was president of the Women's Auxiliary, head of the Candy Striper program. She was the secretary for citizenship. This despite the fact that she was German-born, and she didn't become a Canadian citizen until 1958. But interestingly enough,
I'm getting the grand tour.
Hi, Anne. Hi, Brian. Interestingly enough. Forgive me, there's some dust in here. Now, I had a thought in mind, and I let them talk me out of it. Let me see.
You just said your wife was more prominent in Guelph.
Oh, yeah, well, while she was working for the Red Cross here in Guelph, she was approached by a lady who was very well known in Guelph, and she invited Hen to become a member of an organization called the IODE, which is the Independent Order Daughters of the Empire. Well, you can imagine a born German being invited to be a member of the Independent Order of Daughters of the Empire. So Hannah told her, and Owen said, it didn't matter, we want you as a member. So she not only became a member of the order, but she became, as I said, their Secretary of Citizenship. She held quite a few social roles of that type in the city. That was my major connection with the city.
That's good. So I don't have many more. advice to ask you. I got an hour on the dot. So I just gotta again make sure that you agreed with the interview. Everything you said was okay.
We've said nothing wrong. We've not cast aspersions on anyone's character. So no, I think all is well. Unless you've got anything more that you'd like to know.
I got all the questions I wanted to ask. Like I said, you could the newspaper articles. Like I have the online copy for my assignment.
Well,
there's
no sense in leaving them with me because I'm in there sorting papers at the moment.
Oh, okay.
And I hate the job.
It's just if you want it, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
So that's once the assignment's complete, I'm pretty sure we come back here and we show you guys and everything, so you'll be able to see it.
What would you be doing with the article?
With the article?
When you're finished writing.
I hand it in and it gets graded. I hand it in and it gets graded, but the voice recording, we do it through a website, so we gotta post the voice recording on a website that our whole class uses or class accesses, and it's on the web, so that's why I gotta ask and make sure. But the written assignment, I give to my prof and she marks it. But yeah, like I said, you could see it too. If you wanted to.
Yeah, will it be put on a database?
Yeah.
So it will be available to the public from a database.
The public, yeah, if they really want to search for it.
I'm not concerned about it. I'm just curious.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure the website. When we come back and everything, you'll have all the information.
Well, you know, I was surprised because some while ago I was doing something. I don't know. At the moment, I don't remember what it was. But I went into the Guelph, the University of Guelph library online and was doing some searching. And I found a couple of articles that mentioned me from after I had retired. And you found many more that I didn't even bother searching for. So, yeah, I guess I did take up some of their time.
Because the focus of my assignment was your time at the I found those same articles.
I'm sorry?
I found those same articles that you found because it's through the Guelph Primo.
Oh, yeah.
But the focus of my assignment was your time at the university as the university progressed with you, like you both did it at the same time.
Yes, it was, I guess, impressive to watch the growth, but not necessarily a pleasure.
I understand what you mean, yeah.
I remember coming out of the library at the back door, at the delivery door, and my car was parked right behind the library because that was a parking lot. Mm-hmm. And I drove down the lane and I got to the end of the lane. And across the road at the Food Science Building, they were just bringing in two trees. They had them on big cranes, and these trees were dangling in the wind. And I watched them plant them. That impressed me. That they were able to bring in such mature vegetation and make it survive in that environment.
Yep. Sure. Definitely.
There were some... There's one big building there. Let's see if I can remember.
Behind the... Where?
Siegel?
Siegel.
Is there a Siegel building?
Siegel building? I don't believe so. Is, is it beside the library, north, south? Because I don't... Siegel doesn't sound familiar.
I honestly can't say. Brian Siegel. He was president of the university.
Okay. I'm trying to think. It doesn't sound familiar. It might still be there, but it doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah, it was a fairly... It's a fairly new building. Classroom. I guess Siegel deserves something. He wasn't one of my favorite people. Brian Siegel is... He went on to... He left the university to take a job as the editor, general editor or something for Maclean's.
Okay.
His brother was an advisor for a conservative prime minister, Bob Bryan. Not important. But they were an impressive family. And I'm holding you up and chatting about nothing at all.
No, well, I have nothing to do. I have no more class today. An hour six, though. That's a good size interview.
I'm sorry?
We got an hour 7 minutes of interview, so that's a good size. So
I, yeah. You didn't. You didn't. Of course, that's what it was supposed to be. You were supposed to be talking. I was supposed to be talking.
My life's not that interesting. You've had a more interesting life than I. I'll just turn this off.